I first want to acknowledge the lead person on this study. She's Dr. Merdiye Şender, who is a professor at the Florence Nightingale School of Nursing in Istanbul, Turkey, along with Funda Büyük Yılmaz and Zuhal Çelik. And we have no relationships to disclose. Rational use of medicines is of great interest to the WHO. According to the WHO, patients receive medications appropriate to their clinical needs in doses that meet their own individual requirements for an adequate period of time and at the lowest cost to them and their community. And of course, the other very important component of rational use of medicines is that the patients adhere to their treatments. When we switch the word, irrational to irrational use of medicines, we see that worldwide more than 50% of all medicines are prescribed, dispensed, or sold inappropriately. 50% of patients fail to take them correctly. And at the same time, about one-third of the world's population lacks access to the most essential medications. So what's the problem here? Of course, you as healthcare providers know inappropriate doses result in serious morbidity and mortality, particularly for childhood infections and chronic diseases such as hypertension, diabetes, epilepsy, and mental disorders. Inappropriate use and overuse of medicines waste resources, and that results in frequent out-of-pocket payments for patients and significant patient harm in terms of poor patient outcomes and adverse drug reactions. The purpose of this study was to assess rational medicine use behaviors of individuals, and we chose our individuals from among about 900 primary health care centers in Turkey, which selected randomly selected five primary health centers, and we used a survey method, non-experimental design. The instrument was specifically designed for the Turkish context. It included 26 questions on rational use of prescription medicines and perceptions of the subjects. There were some additional questions on socio-demographic characteristics of the participants. I want to give you just a context of the study location. This is the map of Turkey, and Istanbul is right here. And just to bring it to the current political situation, this is the Syrian border, and we now have millions of refugees crossing the border to safety in Turkey. And Istanbul is pretty isolated from all of that. It's thousands of miles away, but the Turkish people and government are very much aware of what's happening on the other side of our borders, both in Iraq and Syria. Turkey is considered a bridge between Europe and Asia. It's just slightly larger than Texas. It's the 17th largest economy in the world, one of the fastest growing economies in the world as well. It has a population of 75 million people and a GDP per capita of about $15,000. And it has the honor of being the only stable secular democracy in the world with a large Muslim majority and a crazy conservative president and prime minister, I need to add. Turkish healthcare system went through a major transformation. It was actually called the transformation of the Turkish healthcare system, the name of the plan, in the last few years. And as a result of that transformation, major reform movement, nearly all Turkish citizens are under a single insurance system. And individuals have freedom to choose a family physician and choose any public hospital, and freedom to choose participating private hospitals with higher co-pays. They have established a huge network of community health centers as well as family health centers across the country. And the quickest and the most impressive achievement was the completion of the National Health Information System. Similar to our social security numbers, you can log on and enter your information, and instantly you have access to your information, medical information, and your providers also at the same time have access to that, so there's a continuity of information. What did the Turkish reform program accomplish? I'm really very impressed with these things. Infant mortality rates under 1 year of age went down from 29 to 10 in 7 years. Life expectancy went up from 70.9 to 73.7. Vaccination rates are at 97%. There's a higher satisfaction among individuals with health care services. That went from 39.5 to 73.1. Burden of out-of-pocket expenditures declined, and productivity in hospitals improved significantly. These are the things that we would like to see as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and that's my next project, the comparison of the two reform movements. I want to highlight some of the common costs to the patients in the Turkish national healthcare system. The premiums are about $100 per month per person. Per visit charges are $2 to $10, and 30% out-of-pocket private hospital costs. For the private hospitals that participate in the program, and what I want to highlight is the prescription charges that are $2, around $2. That is not the medication charge. That's the prescription charge. So if your primary care provider writes you a prescription, in addition to the $2 to $10 per visit charge, you have to pay a $2 prescription charge. And then when you are buying your medications, it's about 20% out-of-pocket copay for the medication. And that was, of course, to reduce the overuse of medications. Let me tell you about a little bit about the demographic characteristics of our sample. We had 241 females and 141 males. Majority of them were females. 96.1% of the participants had health insurance, as expected. And that 3.9% is tough to explain, but it is mostly the immigrants that crossed the border into Turkey from Syria or Iraq or other places. And lots of immigrants see Turkey as I said, a bridge to Europe. It's much easier to go to Europe from Turkey. And instead of asking dollar amounts, my colleagues and I had decided that we were going to ask individuals about their own perceived income status. So 3.9% of the participants reported they had more than adequate income. 58.1% reported adequate income, and 38% reported inadequate income. When I was analyzing the data, I found that very interesting because these family health centers are mostly frequented by lower middle class Turkish people. Most middle class and upper middle class Turks will use private offices that because the insurance system is such that if your work will most probably give you additional insurance that covers the private office visits as well. So a big majority of are, well, my slides have changed, I'm sorry about that. A big majority of our participants were primary school graduates, and there was 12% that did not have any formal education, and about 48% of them were housewives. Again, that reflects the nature of the family care visits. These are the questions that we asked our participants, and the numbers first look quite good. I'm not going to go through all of them individually, but what you will see here is about 30 to 40% of the respondents are reporting some sort of irrational use of medications or inappropriate use of medications. Just to give you an example, as 23, well, if you can see 67, and this is actually even larger, 67% of the respondents would stop using meds without asking the provider, and 33% receives medications without an examination, and it goes on like that. And the only bright point in this was double doses after skipping a dose was only at 6.8%. All the others had large percentages of indications of irrational use of medications. And it not only from the perspective of the patients, but also from the perspective of the providers, there were problems. There were 30% of the providers, for example, I'm just going to the last one, did not even explain the side effects of the medications. So I did a few other additional analyses correlating these findings with some other demographic variables. And for our subjects who were over 35 years of age, they were significantly more likely to keep old medications, use medications in the medicine cabinet when sick, stop using meds without asking the provider, double dose after skipping a dose, object to use of generics, receive details about diagnosis from the provider, receive medications without indications, and receive information about prescription. And then I looked at also education. If our subjects are high school grads or more, they were significantly more likely not to keep old medications, inquire about directions on medications, not stop using medications without asking the provider, and they were more likely to fully comprehend providers' explanations of medications. And finally, subjects who perceived themselves as having adequate or more income were more likely to request a specific medication from the provider, receive information about the prescription, have the provider ask questions on current medications, ask the provider to repeat explanations of medications, and they were more likely not to ask the provider to prescribe cheaper medications. In summary, age, education level, and income are significant predictors of irrational use of medications in the Turkish primary healthcare context. Overall, for a great majority of the questions, 30 to 50% of respondents indicated irrational use of medications. I want to just switch gears now and tell you why is this so relevant for the United States. In the United States, according to a recent Forbes report, $418 billion was wasted on irrational use of medications. $55.8 billion was spent unnecessarily on higher-priced medications when more affordable, similar drugs could have been used. $93 billion could have been saved if patients had shopped around pharmacies or used mail-order pharmacies. $269 billion was spent on avoidable medical expenses because patients did not stay on the medicines they were prescribed. And nine out of the, I wanted to show this map to you, it's our red states along with Louisiana all the way at the bottom. 9 of the 10 poorest states rank among the most wasteful in medication-related costs. According to the WHO, the strategies for improving rational drug use includes both improved pharmacotherapy training for physicians and other providers, and limits on numbers per patients, advertising limits, patients cost sharing, and so on and so forth. I have a handout on the APA list if you'd like to see them. And this is my presentation. I'll take questions now if you'd like.
Any questions?
Yes.
No, they don't know it yet.
The study has not yet been published. We are working on the publication. But they will learn. I thought some of the numbers were quite disturbing. Yes?
I'm very interested in the prescription trust.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it's already ongoing.
Okay.
Yes.
How many years?
It's still an ongoing project, but in 2008, the health transformation project was in full force.
Is it all over the public
hospitals? Well, private hospitals are different. This is specifically true for public contexts. Well, unfortunately, that's a tough question to answer. I do not have that data, and I very much doubt if the data is accessible, because what happened is, what we knew was people were spending a lot of money out of pocket for medications and so on and so forth. Along with the health transformation system came the information component as well. We have health informatics, electronic medical records nationally. Now people can follow what's happening. And the overall agreement is out-of-pocket charges, both for medications as well as treatment options, have gone down. And that's why people are happy. I don't have the data with me, but I'll be glad to search for it and share it with you happily. It's available. It's available. My pleasure.
Okay.
Yes. Well, what is happening, and what I have done as a study in upstate New York looking at antibiotic prescriptions, and what we have found, and this is particularly true for the group of patients that we studied, older housewife females, not particularly educated, if they do not leave the office with a prescription, they feel cheated. They feel that they have wasted their times. And therefore, a lot of physicians, in Turkey we don't have nurse practitioners, a lot of physicians will write a prescription, regardless of the true usefulness of that prescription. And this is a worldwide phenomenon. So what that point says is, limit and make the number of prescriptions smaller. It's not necessarily saying if they need it, don't give it to them, but don't give them more than they need. That's the point.
And how would you enforce that?
The whole point is training the providers. training the providers, as well as, well, I think there's a consumer component as well, but it's, I think, much more significant to train the providers. We did that in upstate New York, and we showed them their report cards, and prescription rates fell right down, very significantly for antibiotics. Absolutely. Absolutely. But for this context, when you look at the numbers, when you say that 30% of the patients don't even are not even asked about their other medications,
right.
So you know there could be very serious interactions and so on and so forth.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.